This is the History Podcast. Now, here's your host, Jason Thomason.
Welcome to the History Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Thomason, and today we're looking at the last and final event of our series on how the Secret Service has evolved through the years. And we're doing that by looking at different presidential assassination attempts. Today, we're looking at 1981, and that is the assassination attempt on President Ronald Reagan. So grab a cup of coffee, get comfortable, and let's get to it. The 1970s marked a period of political and ideological tension for the United States. As the country faced the challenges of stagflation and Cold War tensions with the Soviet Union, the 70s brought us a historic presidential resignation, followed by a presidential pardon for that president, and then a peanut farmer from Georgia. However, in 1980, Ronald Reagan, a Hollywood actor turned politician, won the 1980 presidential election and took office in January of 1981. His presidency was characterized by conservative policies, including tax cuts, deregulation, and a strong stance against communism. On March 30th, 1981, Ronald Reagan was scheduled to give a luncheon speech at the Washington Hilton Hotel in Washington, D.C. This was only 69 days into his presidency, and little did he expect that this event would forever change the course of his presidency and the nation. It was a typical day in Washington, D.C. As President Reagan stepped out of the White House on the morning of March 30th, he was very busy. He's trying to get used to the new digs, if you will. He is trying to get caught up to speed on all the agenda items, including meetings with staff, and he had a luncheon speech to give, and also had a rehearsal for an upcoming television address that he was set to air on national TV. The president seemed full of energy and optimism as he left the White House that day. And as the president's motorcade arrived at the Washington Hilton Hotel, a crowd gathered to see if they could get a glimpse of the newly elected leader. Among the spectators was a man by the name of John Hinckley Jr., a 25-year-old man with a very troubled past and a weird obsession with a young actress at the time, Jodie Foster. Unbeknownst to those around him, Hinckley carried with him a malevolent plan, one that would soon shatter the sense of security felt by the nation. As President Reagan exited his limousine and began making his way towards the hotel entrance, Hinckley lurked nearby. And when the perfect moment arrived, he pulled out a .22 caliber revolver and fired six shots in rapid succession. The chaos that ensued left four individuals injured: White House Press Secretary James Brady, Secret Service Agent Timothy McCarthy, Washington Police Officer Thomas Delahunty, and yes, you guessed it, President Ronald Reagan himself. In the midst of the pandemonium, Agent Jerry Parr, head of the Presidential Protection Division, quickly recognized the gravity of the situation and acted heroically. He pushed President Reagan into the limousine, shielding him from further gunfire, and ordered the driver to rush right away to the nearby George Washington University Hospital. Meanwhile, Secret Service Agent Tim McCarthy, instinctively stepping into harm's way, bravely positioned himself between Hinckley and the president, taking a bullet in the chest in the process. His actions, along with those of James Brady and Thomas Delahunty, would later earn them recognition and gratitude for their bravery under fire. Inside the hospital, the gravity of President Reagan's condition became very evident. A bullet had struck him just above the heart, puncturing his left lung and causing internal bleeding. The bullet missed his heart by less than an inch. Quick action was crucial, and the medical team rallied to save the president's life. Meanwhile, the nation watched with bated breath as news of the assassination attempt unfolded. What's interesting is the initial report came out that Reagan was not hit, and then on live air, they realized that that was incorrect information, and they have to come back and say, oh my goodness, he has been hit. And so that is going to cause more uncertainty, more fear throughout the nation. And then we start to hear stories of heroism and resilience about people like Special Agent Parr and his swift actions and the medical team's extraordinary efforts to stabilize the president. One of my favorite stories about Ronald Reagan is actually from this event. As the story goes, he's on the surgical table getting ready to go under anesthesia before they, you know, go and try to get this bullet out. And Reagan looks around the room, and as the surgeons tell it, Reagan looked at them all and said, boy, I sure hope all you guys are Republicans. And that was the last thing he said before he went under anesthesia. Reagan's recovery was nothing short of miraculous. As public support poured in, the nation witnessed a resolve in their leader that became emblematic of the man himself. Just weeks after the attempt on his life, weeks, President Reagan returned to the White House. His popularity surged as he defied the odds, displaying a determination that won admiration from both sides of the political aisle, at least for a little while. In fact, on April 28th, so think about this, the assassination attempt, he gets shot on March 31st, and by April 28th, not even a month after being shot, within less than an inch of his heart, Reagan will deliver an address before the joint session of the Congress on the Program for Economic Recovery. And at the beginning of this speech, this really important economic speech, President Reagan took a moment to give thanks and to also add a little Reagan levity to the situation. As we go to break here for just a minute, I want you to take a listen to a portion of that speech. We'll be back in a moment.
You wouldn't want to talk me into an encore, would you? Mr. Speaker, Mr. President, distinguished members of the Congress, honored guests, and fellow citizens, I have no words to express my appreciation for that greeting. I have come to speak to you tonight about our economic recovery program and why I believe it's essential that the Congress approve this package, which I believe will lift the crushing burden of inflation off of our citizens and restore the vitality to our economy and our industrial machine. First, however, and due to events of the past few weeks, will you permit me to digress for a moment from the all-important subject of why we must bring government spending under control and reduce tax rates? I'd like to say a few words directly to all of you and to those who are watching and listening tonight, because this is the only way I know to express to all of you on behalf of Nancy and myself our appreciation for your messages, your flowers, and most of all, your prayers, not only for me, but for those others who fell beside me. The warmth of your words, the expression of friendship, and yes, love, meant more to us than you can ever know. You have given us a memory that we'll treasure forever. And you've provided an answer to those few voices that were raised saying that what happened was evidence that ours is a sick society. The society we heard from is made up of millions of compassionate Americans and their children from college age to kindergarten. As a matter of fact, as evidence of that, I have a letter with me. The letter came from Peter Sweeney. He's in the second grade in the Riverside School in Rockville Center. And he said, I hope you get well quick, or you might have to make a speech in your pajamas. P.S. If you have to make a speech in your pajamas, I warned you.
Following the attempted assassination on March 30th, 1981, specific measures were implemented to enhance presidential security protocols. Some of these measures included expanded personnel and training. There was an increase in the number of security personnel responsible for the president's protection. Additionally, training programs were intensified to ensure that the security teams were well prepared to handle various potential threats. There was also an emphasis on advanced technology integration into the program. And the adoption of this cutting-edge security technology became priority number one. And some of these include the use of advanced surveillance systems, improved communication equipment, and the incorporation of modern security technologies to bolster the overall protection of the president. We're also going to see an improvement on secured transportation. Measures were taken to enhance the security of presidential transportation. This involved upgrading and fortifying vehicles, implementing stricter access control, and employing advanced tracking and monitoring devices. Additionally, we're going to see closer collaboration and coordination between different law enforcement agencies involved in presidential security. This will allow for a more integrated and comprehensive approach to threat assessment and prevention. We'll also see robust emergency response protocols developed and implemented to ensure a swift and effective response in the event of an emergency or if there ever is a security breach. This involved rehearsing and fine-tuning response procedures to address the various scenarios that they may come into in the future. And that's one thing that's interesting about studying the evolution of the Secret Service is no two events are ever the same. Yes, a president is shot at, but the scenarios are all different. And so you have to adapt and you have to evolve based on the modern context that you're in. And lastly, we're going to see stricter screening procedures that are going to be put into place for individuals attending public events where the president would be present. This included a more thorough background check of individuals and increased security measures at public venues. These measures collectively aimed to fortify the security infrastructure surrounding the president. And they addressed the vulnerabilities exposed by the events of not only March 30th, 1981, but all the events we have looked at throughout the course of this series of podcast episodes. And what we have seen as a result is a reduction in the risk of future security threats. As we reflect on that fateful day, it serves as a reminder that history can literally change in the blink of an eye. The attempted assassination of President Ronald Reagan not only shaped the rest of his presidency, but it also left a mark on the nation's memory. People who are old enough to remember this event can tell you where they were when they heard about Ronald Reagan being shot. But what we see, as we mentioned earlier, is Reagan's popularity was already high going into the 1980 election. And he crushed Jimmy Carter in the 1980 election. It was a landslide victory in 80. But his 1984 re-election bid surpassed that victory when Reagan won 528 electoral votes, solidifying him as one of America's most popular presidents of all time. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for joining me today on the History Podcast. I hope that you have enjoyed this series of podcasts on the evolution of the Secret Service. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast so that you will get notifications when new episodes are released. I also want to encourage you to check out our new YouTube channel, At The History Podcast Show, all one word, At The History Podcast Show. Lastly, as always, I want to remind you, those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it. We'll see you next time.
Tell the truth, Doc. You gotta believe me.
Then tell me, future boy. Who's president of the United States in 1985?
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan? The actor? Then who's vice president? Jerry Lewis.